Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, our guest is Rabbi Michael Zedek, author of the new book, Taking Miracles Seriously. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom! We're headed now for the wonderful winter holiday of Hanukkah, starting in just 10 days. Frankly, I can't wait. Hanukkah is a great festival filled with lights, songs, parties, and of course, lots of latkes. The perfect food, by the way. Fried potatoes with onions mixed in, guaranteed to be completely free of cholesterol, fat, and free radicals for the entire 8 days of this wonderful holiday of lights. Hanukkah begins December 25th this year and runs through the day of January 2nd, a full 8 nights and days of celebration. To get us in the mood for Hanukkah, here's a pre-Hanukkah play-in from our extensive list of cuts for the Festival of Lights and Latkes, Maoz Tzur, Rock of Ages, Jewish version of that one, as sung by the great cantor Ben Sion Miller. Sir Yeshi, you see a Hono and a Shabaya, take time by the philosophy, some toy don is a bayah. Yes, to Hanamad Bayah, Mitzor and Abayah, Ozek Mabishir, Miss Morhanika, Miss Bayah, Rois of one of Shibayo, going Koykin, Hayai Mari Beki, Shibishib, the Malach is a globe. Give you Doyak Doylo, I see a skill, Halparo Beholza. Well, that should get us off to a vibrant pre-Hanukkah start today, Maoz Tzur, a fast-paced version by cantor Ben Sion Miller. While this may surprise some of you, Hanukkah is usually considered a minor holiday in Jewish tradition, a festival of limited religious importance. The hierarchy of holidays is interesting in every religious tradition, never quite squares with what people actually do. For example, in Christianity, the most important holiday is Easter, not Christmas. But far more people do the December holiday with all its considerable trappings. It works that way for Jews, too. Well, sort of. According to biblical and rabbinic tradition, the most important holiday in Judaism is Shabbat, the weekly renewal of the Sabbath. Next, in hierarchy, are Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, holiest days of the year, the New Year and the Day of Atonement, the High Holidays. After those come the three pilgrimage festivals, Passover, Sukkot, and Shavuot, agricultural, historical, and religious holidays of meaning and antiquity. And only then are we supposed to consider Hanukkah and Purim in importance, these kind of similar festivals celebrating our triumph over destructive forces, holidays of redemption from annihilation. In the traditional ordering of Jews, these are delightful minor festivals to be enjoyed but not taken too seriously. But the way of the world is such that what people really do is not exactly what the authorities say they should do. You may have noticed this in some other areas of your life, perhaps. It turns out that we Jews really enjoy Hanukkah, especially American Jews, in part because of its proximity to the other end-of-the-year holiday that garners so much attention. You know, Kwanzaa. The two most observed Jewish holidays in America are actually Passover, Pesach, and Hanukkah. And Hanukkah may have even edged ahead in recent years. I admit that I gently embrace this tendency. Hanukkah is a terrific festival. Its themes of religious freedom, courage, and faith, the lighting of Hanukkah candles, well, it can be the most magical of all Jewish celebrations. So let your inner Hanukkah child out this year. Celebrate the Festival of Lights in a season in which we really need a bit of illumination during the short days and long nighttime darkness. Now, you might possibly have heard that Taylor Swift's Eras Tour finally ended. She's not Jewish, but her tunes go on, of course, and naturally, there are some Hanukkah parodies to carry them forward. Here's a terrific Hanukkah version of one of her many big hits.
You're on the phone with your Bobby. She's upset. She's wondering why you haven't lit your candles yet. Cause she's waited all day long just to see you.
Just to see you.
We're in the room, not a typical Tuesday night. We're setting up all the candles we're gonna light. We start to tell the story.
Light with me indeed. While Hanukkah has all kinds of wonderful and silly music that we get to play, there are some other songs that never quite made it to the Hanukkah playlist on Too Jewish. Here's our list of top 10 Hanukkah songs that never quite caught on. Maestro, a drum roll, please. Number 10 on the list of Hanukkah songs that never quite caught on, Oi to the World. Number 9, Schlepping Through a Winter Wonderland. Number 8, Hava Nagila, the Megamix. Number 7, Bubby Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Number 6, Enough with the Jingle Bells Already. Number 5, Latke, Latke Man by the Lower East Side Village People. Number 4, I Have a Little Dreidel, the Barking Dogs version. Number 3, Come On Baby, Light My Menorah. Number 2, Deck the Halls with Balls of Challah. And the number 1 Hanukkah song that never quite caught on, Silent Night, I Should Only Be So Lucky. Yep, those were our top 10 list of Hanukkah songs that never quite made it. Coming up fast, please join our pre-Hanukkah celebration at Beit Simcha this Saturday night, December 21st, starting at 4:30 p.m. Beit Simcha's Light Up the Night celebration is this Saturday night, December 21st, celebration of our 6th congregational anniversary, a pre-Hanukkah festival with wonderful food, drink, a cabaret of theater and music, a birthday cake with candles, gourmet latkes, a fabulous celebration. Join us. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. That's BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Rabbi Michael Zedek, a good friend who has a great deal to teach us about miracles. Find out when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
We are delighted to welcome a friend of long standing. We're not supposed to say old friend because we're not supposed to get old. Rabbi Michael Zedek was one of the really outstanding pulpit rabbis in America. He has now moved on to different occupations. He has a new book called Taking Miracles Seriously, A Journey to Everyday Spirituality. It's terrific. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning, Samuel. It is wonderful to hear your voice and delighted to be with you. And by the way, old friend as a notion, I currently reside in the greater Kansas City area where Satchel Paige made his reputation. And one of his less well-known lines was, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you was? So I'm a whole bunch of ages, including a moment ago I was in kindergarten, and now, lo and behold, if you promise not to tell anybody, I'm 78.
Kinahora, as we say professionally. So tell me, what's a miracle?
Well, I think to turn it upside down, of course, the challenge is what isn't, what doesn't qualify as something extraordinary, because all of us tend to divide the world into ordinary and extraordinary. What do? We take the ordinary for granted, and the extraordinary we can't ignore. So the book's emphasis is that the secret to a rich and enriching life is to be able to celebrate the wonder of the ordinary, the stuff that we take for granted regularly. Or as to put it in Einstein's terms, he purportedly said, there are two ways to live. The first is though nothing is a miracle. The second is though everything is a miracle. Now, I can go on. You want me to go on for a little bit more?
No, yeah, absolutely. Although I was thinking of
one of the things that's absolutely fascinating, and this is going to be, he's got to be kidding to some of your listeners. The Hebrew Bible has words that are translated as miracle, but they don't mean what we often would associate with the definition, namely a supernatural intervention into the regular routine of experience. The first word that's most commonly used is nes, as in nes gadol haya sham or haya po, Hanukkah season being when we're recording practically on the threshold. A great miracle happened there is how it's translated, but nes means a sign or a symbol. Signs and symbols point to something else, to something further, right? Next word is ot, which is literally the Hebrew word for a letter of the alphabet, which is another agreed symbol that when we put an O is agreed that that's what an O is. It points to something else. And my favorite, of course, is pella, which means a wow or a wonder. So the book's effort is what, taken seriously, isn't a wow or a wonder. If we could just, to use a Heschelism, restore our eyes of wonder.
You know, it reminds me of the Modim prayer, which we thank God for the ordinary miracles, right?
My favorite is it reminds me of the plumber's prayer. Mafli la'asot, you know, that our plumbing, which we take for granted unless it's not functioning, right?
Right.
Is also mafli, which is a verb form of pella, is wow to do.
I mean, it is amazing if you think about it. We will talk much more with Rabbi Michael Zedek about his new book, about miracles, and what gets in our way, actually, of perceiving the miracles everywhere. When we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a fabulous array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established 6 years ago, we're celebrating that anniversary this Saturday night. By great congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation, northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in person. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is available for school-aged children and grandchildren in our Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Shabbat morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Or you can come to our services on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimchaTucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom. You can go to those by going to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson. Join us this Saturday night, December 21st, 4:30 p.m., our sixth anniversary celebration of our synagogue, a pre-Hanukkah festival. Light up the night with us, great food and drink, gourmet latkes, theater, music, and joy. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up, be a sponsor, or just attend. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Beit Simcha Tucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing and most dynamic Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio 18 at Gmail, or go to our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store. Is very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean, and now on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been talking about diverse Jewish communities, and at the end of our session last week, we talked about, just kind of briefly, you mentioned the very prominent Baghdadi Jewish families, the Kaduris and the Sassoons, who had an enormous influence on the development, not only of Jewish communities, but of really the economies of entire areas like Shanghai, China, and parts of India, and so on. That's a really unusual phenomenon, I think.
Right. And actually, I think we've talked about the Kaduris and Sassoons before
in terms
of The Kings of Shanghai, that fabulous book.
And I've interviewed him on that, details
their story over the course of a century. But what we discussed off mic was, how did the Brits become so influential in Iraq? How, when, why? And we discovered, after a quick check of open sources, that at the end of World War I, the Ottoman Empire was basically split up between the British and the French. And they had some weird criteria of who presumably had historic cultural influence or experience or presence in which part of the Middle East. Hence, the Brits ended up with something called Mandatory Iraq from 1918 to 1932, when Iraq gained independence. And they had Mandatory Palestine from 1918 till 1948, when part of Mandatory Palestine became the State of Israel. The French got Lebanon and Syria, which they, in their unique way, view as being Francophone still, and they still exert a great deal of cultural influence in those places. But the Jewish families of Baghdad, there were merchant families who got British passports in the 19th century and who were able to use British trading facilities, banking facilities, etc., because they were fluent in English, throughout the eastern part of the British Empire, which included not only all of India and what today is Pakistan and Bangladesh, but also what today is Myanmar.
Right, Burma in those days, right?
Significant parts of what is now China, like Shanghai. Right. And Shanghai was basically built by two Jewish families from Baghdad. And that story is just amazing, but it's well known. I wouldn't say it's that atypical of what happened during the colonial era, because, you know, people played fast and loose with the regulations. Everybody was always motivated by the prospect of making money. Some people did it in very creative ways. The Jewish merchants made very sure to stay on the right side of the law because they were used to being at least somewhat persecuted or somewhat overly scrutinized in their home countries, so they didn't want to take any chances. But they were also smart and multilingual and had connections all over the world, so it was easy for them to build their own sort of family, commercial, and mercantile empires against the background of these large colonial empires.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And, you know, it's funny. They're really living out something that had happened 800 years before with the Raidanites, when Jewish traders at a much, I guess it would be a lower level, but a high level of finance for that, could move from one community to another because there was always a Jewish community along the Silk Road farther down or the trade routes, and they could find people that would bring them home and spoke a language that they shared. It might have been Aramaic in those days, whatever it was that was the common language at the time.
and would recognize their letters of credit, you know, and establish so that they could function without having been there before. It's really a fascinating thing. We take a lot of things for granted in the modern world about being able to move around and do stuff.
Have Google.
Yeah. Yes. Started by a Jewish guy, I might add. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A businessman gets on a plane and sits down next to Hannah, an elegant woman wearing the largest and most stunning diamond ring he's ever seen. He has to ask her about it. "Oh," Hannah says, "this is the Plotnik diamond. It is beautiful, but there's a terrible curse that goes with it." "What's the curse?" the guy asks. And Hannah answers, "Mr. Plotnik." Yes, that was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. In a change of pace and literary emphasis, Joseph becomes the principal character of the last four weekly portions of Genesis. Joseph's story is a more complete narrative than any that has preceded it in the Torah. This forms a developmental transition from the short vignettes we are used to in Genesis to the long narrative of Moses that begins in Exodus and occupies the rest of the Torah. The Joseph story has been called the first truly modern piece of literature, filled with contemporary authorial techniques and the delineation of character and plot. Each segment ends with a cliffhanger. The interplay of storylines and locations makes the whole narrative vibrant, rich, and exceedingly compelling. This modern style is particularly impressive since the book of Genesis was written at least 2,500 years ago. The Joseph narrative stretches through a month of Torah readings. In the weekly portions of Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, and Vayechi, we find temptation and cunning, nobility and baseness, carelessness and probity, all juxtaposed and then thoughtfully counterpointed. The foolish gain wisdom. The wicked see the error of their ways. The impulsive learn restraint. Nothing is ever quite so simple as it initially seems. The Joseph story is a great one. Wonderful writing about fascinating characters. You know, Joseph is one of the spectacular figures in the whole Bible. Brilliant, talented, arrogant, gifted with both remarkable vision and tremendous administrative talent. He is a youth of extraordinary promise who becomes a man of fate and determination, one who survives enormous trauma to reshape two nations' intertwined destinies. A remarkably contemporary character, Joseph is a brazen, spoiled boy who transforms into a subtle and deep man. It's not an easy process, but it begins with a bang in this week's portion of Vayeshev. At the commencement of our Sedra, Jacob's beloved wife Rachel has died in childbirth. In a pained overcompensation, Jacob spoils Rachel's oldest son, Joseph, gives him a famous coat of many colors, maybe an embroidered tunic, and uses him as a tattletale spy on his older, tougher brothers. The brothers' revenge is swift. Away from their father's eye, they capture Joseph and sell him into slavery in Egypt, implying to their father that a wild animal has killed him. After adventures demonstrating Joseph's newfound virtue and spectacularly bad luck, this week's Torah portion ends with Joseph stuck in an Egyptian prison, his father Jacob back in Canaan mourning his supposed death. All hope is seemingly lost. There are two central messages in this remarkable portion of Vayeshev. The first we've heard in Genesis earlier, but it is now reiterated poignantly. Our children are all precious. Favoring the good ones does no one any good. Treat each with love, as though, in fact, each of our children was truly an only child in receiving our love. That's the Jewish way to parent successfully. The second and greatest abiding message of the Joseph story is that God's plan will work, but we aren't always party to why or how long it will take. Transformation, moral and intellectual, must first occur. We struggle and sometimes suffer in order to learn what we probably should have known from the start. God is the true source of all good, of all understanding. For Joseph, his brothers and father, wisdom will prove to be hard won. Perhaps in reading this portion of Vayeshev, we can learn from their mistakes and so avoid the dramatic reverses of this great story. And then we ourselves may gain the wisdom to grow and change for the better. When we come back on Too Jewish in a moment, our guest, Rabbi Michael Zedek, explains why miracles should be a part of our lives. They are, in fact, and how our ability to experience the reality of them can be enhanced. Find out when we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Wow, that was quick. After 5 decades of brutal oppression, exploitation, torture, and genocidal massacres conducted at the order of the Assad family, Syrian rebels overthrew the government of Bashar al-Assad in just 11 days. Assad and his wife fled to asylum in Russia, which is apparently the new home for deposed brutal dictators, while the Islamist rebels consolidated power in Syria with lightning speed, capturing and looting Assad's presidential palace. In response, Israel's army, the IDF, moved to occupy the military posts the collapsing Syrian army had deserted near the Israeli border and quickly wiped out a fair amount of Syria's advanced weapons systems and missile capacity. You know, Syria nearly fell to the ISIS-Islamist terrorists back in that 2014 to 2018 war, if you recall. But Assad's regime was saved by the intervention of the Russian air power and Iranian military support. During that same war against the Islamist caliphate, U.S. forces, as well as Turkish and Kurdish military units, eventually annihilated the Islamist threat, at least in Syria and Iraq. All of that served to keep Bashar al-Assad in power and allowed Syria to base Iranian military elements along the Israeli border, causing no end of trouble. Iran's Lebanese proxy, Hezbollah, was also employed supporting the murderous Assad regime, which used chemical weapons on its own citizens if they got too rebellious. Eesh. After ISIS was crippled back in the late 2010s, it looked like Syria was going to stay under the evil domination of the Assads for another generation or two. But this is the Middle East, where strange and terrible things happen as a matter of course. On October 7th, 2023, of course, Hamas Palestinian terrorists unleashed their atrocious war crime attack against Israeli civilians in the south of Israel. In the north, Hezbollah provided some cover and support for Hamas, regularly firing missiles and rockets into Israel's northern communities. The IDF first attacked Hamas, and after nearly a year of hard fighting, Israel essentially eliminated Hamas as a military threat. They then turned to Hezbollah in Lebanon, determined to end the shelling and rocket attacks and the murder of Israeli citizens in the north of the country. Mind you, this is the same Hezbollah that was helping Iran prop up the Assad regime in Syria. In a series of lightning strikes that began by blowing up the pagers used by Hezbollah and included the elimination of the longtime Hezbollah terrorist leader Hassan Nasrallah, Israel has whipped Hezbollah conclusively. Hezbollah has, for the present, ceased to be a dangerous fighting force in the region, thanks to Israel. Iran, the sponsor of all these anti-Israel proxies, made the mistake of attacking Israel directly from the air during all this warfare. Israel carefully retaliated, knocking out Iran's air defense systems and much of its missile capacity, too. That meant that in a short period of time, Assad's terrible regime had lost the foreign and terrorist military aid that had kept it in power. Hezbollah was on its heels. Iran was out of the fight. And when the Islamists in the north and east of Syria figured out what the situation was, well, they simply attacked. In less than 2 weeks, Syria was overrun by these newly cleaned up and professionalized al-Qaeda disciples. Assad was gone to his new accommodations in Adaha in Russia. In essence, the Palestinian terrorists, rapists, kidnappers, and murderers of October 7, 2023 contributed materially to the wipeout of the leadership of most of the terrorist power of Hezbollah and to the destruction of the Assad family's power in Syria, not to mention the severe diminishment of Iran's influence in the region. We will see how the new reality in Syria plays out. For now, the new regime there pledges to focus on cleaning up and rebuilding Syria, free of the failures and tortures and imprisonments of the Assad era. It professes to have no interest in cultivating an international caliphate or an anti-Israel military campaign. We hope that remains true going forward. One thing is certainly clear. Israel is now in a much stronger position vis-a-vis its standing in the Middle East, at least for now.
Mut di Ballspieler, es passt nit as min Verspiel. Weil sie sehen, zwei, drei Steigs neus bei der Baseballspiel.
Jewish pitcher Max Fried signed an 8-year, $218 million contract with the New York Yankees last week, the largest contract ever for a Jewish player, as well as the largest ever for a left-handed pitcher. Fried, who turns 31 in January, entered the baseball offseason as one of the most coveted free agents on the market. He had a dazzling 8-year run with the Braves that included a World Series title. Now he joins a Yankees team, coming off not only a World Series defeat at the hands of the Dodgers, but the stinging loss of superstar outfielder Juan Soto, a tremendous talent who signed a $765 million megadeal with the crosstown Mets. Max Fried is an L.A. native. He grew up worshiping Hall of Famer and fellow Jewish southpaw Sandy Koufax. He will likely spend the remainder of his career playing in New York, the city with the largest number of Jews of any city in the world. Fried joins fellow Jewish pitcher Scott Efros on their roster. Fried has a 3.07 ERA and 151 career starts. He's a two-time All-Star, a three-time Gold Glove winner, a Silver Slugger winner, not that that matters anymore for pitchers, and a 2021 World Series champion. Max Fried finished as the runner-up in the 2022 National League Cy Young race. Last year, Max Fried was 11-10 with a 3.25 ERA. Fried's $218 million deal is the largest contract in baseball history for a left-hander, topping David Price's 7-year, $217 million contract signed with the Red Sox back in 2015. It is also by far the most lucrative contract ever for a Jewish player, at least so far, more than doubling fellow free agent Alex Bregman's 5-year, $100 million contract extension with the Astros back in 2019. We will see what Bregman signs for this winter. Sean Green previously signed for $84 million with the Dodgers back in 99. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Michael Zedek, who's an extraordinary pulpit rabbi, also head of a federation, is the author of a wonderful new book about the miraculous and how miracles are everywhere. We have to somehow become aware of them in ways that we aren't usually. I have to note that Michael was my mentor in the rabbinate in a new program about a million years ago. And at that point, he was the Pope of Kansas City, the Jewish Pope of Kansas City.
I'm sorry.
Which I thought was pretty miraculous.
I was married.
Yeah, you were married, kids. I know, but still, like, you know, well, you know, Renaissance Pope. Never mind. I'm not going to go there. So, tell us what gets in the way of our ability to perceive the really miraculous.
Goodness. What doesn't get in the way? So, I think in the book I articulate a few items, but one is business and busyness, especially in the American milieu. So many of us have a remarkable energy and success at making a living. We are less skilled, far less skilled, at making a life, and we don't give it nearly the same attention. Second, I think we're addicted to a quick fix, by which I mean, to quote Jim Morrison, I want the world, and I want it now. Or as Carrie Fisher put it, this is a horrifying statement, instant gratification isn't quick enough. Is that not beyond painful?
Oh, my goodness. To be
a bit more serious, you know, I just did 20 minutes of exercise. How come I don't have a six-pack? You know, I mean, goodness gracious. Or, but in a deeper sense, I think there is a challenge of striving to embrace the persons we are yet to be, or to put it another way, we are ceaseless wanderers, you know, that existential yes and no in us. I once gave a sermon, I'm not okay, you're not okay, but that's okay. Because if the only way we're acceptable is if we are somehow at that plateau of perfection, we're doomed. Or Groucho Marx put it this way, I wouldn't want to be a member of a club that would have me as a member. Well, he's wrong. And I'd love to imagine that the book urges us to recognize what Carl Rogers called, it is a curious paradox that when I accept myself as I am, then I can change. Put another way, I'm very fond of the writer Annie Dillard, and if listeners aren't familiar with her, they need to make an acquaintanceship. I'm paraphrasing, if you really pay attention, life is like holding a wine glass under a waterfall. But the challenge is, Henry James, be among those upon whom nothing is lost. Too many of us are all or nothingness. If I can't have it all, I'm not going to bother to join the enterprise. But I guarantee you, we can be among those upon whom less is lost. And the book offers some roadmaps for how maybe to be among those upon whom less is lost of this wondrous, brief, remarkable thing, this miracle we call life.
There's a famous quote of Nachman of Bratslav, the Hasidic master, who said, God places miracles everywhere. Man takes his little hand and covers his little eyes and sees nothing.
Absolutely. You know, that's not unlike, I think it was the Baal Shem Tov who talked about the difference between a window and a mirror.
Please tell us. Please tell us.
Blaze of silver on the back, and all you see is yourself.
Yeah. And if you didn't have that, you could see the world.
Yeah. And see it in all, perhaps, more of its beauty and wonder and joy and challenge. Because, you know, let me put it this way. Another one of the quotes in the book is E.B. White. Great line. I wake up every morning torn between a desire to savor the world and a desire to save it. And that makes it very hard to plan the day. Now, Jewish tradition would insist that it's not either or. The world is here for us to savor. What's the bracha system for if it's not to say, wow, I'm about to participate in a miracle. I'm going to eat. My body's going to get a sensation of joy, one hopes, in good taste. My body is going to be able to get the energy it needs to sustain itself. And lo and behold, wonder of wonders, that which it can no longer use, it's going to get rid of. That's amazing. We are awesomely made, as the psalmist says. But it also calls us to recognize that the world is broken in a lot of places. Let's get to work, because in doing that work, we might even find another sacred dimension to this journey.
It seems to me that as Jews, we're raised to kvetch rather than praise or quell. Now, without losing that sort of sardonic quality that allows Jews to be comedians and writers and creative people in so many ways, how do we move from what is, frankly, not the happiest way to live towards something more optimistic?
Yeah. You know, there's a Lily Tomlin suggestion, the comedian.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think human beings invented a deep language out of a deep-seated need to complain. But, you know...
What's that old joke about Einstein didn't speak until he was eight?
Supposedly. I'm not sure that's actually true, but...
It's not true, but it's a great story.
It's a great joke.
And he said, pass the milk, and they said, why didn't you speak until now? And he said, till now everything was okay.
Exactly. There is an aspect of Jewish education, and maybe education at large, that confuses the ability to be a good critic with wisdom. And I think that's often what happens, you know. The old Grossinger's joke, you know, the food is lousy and the portions
are so small.
Too small, right. I certainly loused that one up, didn't I?
Well, that's okay. I'll just criticize you after we're done.
Well played. Excellent. That was a dunk.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm short for dunking. I'm Jewish, but if you think about it, Judaism is imbued with this idea that the ordinary should be sacred. I mean, what do we do? Every living being eats. We take that and turn that into a celebration of the ordinary into something really raised to a high level.
Wholeheartedly, you don't need anybody to tell you when the extraordinary is happening. But the expertise that Judaism brings to the adventure is precisely that, Sam, that the regular routine, the things that we take for granted, if we took them for granted less, our lives would be more filled with life. And that's, of course, the genius insight behind the idea of trying to recite 100 blessings a day, because the more you recite them, the more you find them.
How do we avoid routine? Because one of the challenges, I think, when you're doing 100 blessings or davening three times a day or whatever it is that is your way of trying to cultivate that, how do you avoid that becoming just another repetitive exercise?
Truth of the matter is, I don't think we can all the time, because no one can live on the mountaintop all the time. There's traffic jams and diapers and all kinds of stuff, but we can live on that mountaintop, metaphorically, more of the time. I will admit to you that there are moments when, before I take a bite of food, I'm just going through the motions. But then there are moments, wow, and then, lo and behold, it is... The book has a lot of poetry in it as well, so here's one of my favorites. Earth's crammed with heaven. Every bush is afire with God. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. The rest sit round and pluck blackberries. If I could have a discussion with Elizabeth Barrett Browning, who wrote those lines. But when it's just a blackberry bush, it is in potential a burning bush. I'm sure that's her point as well.
Sure.
Don't be a pain in the neck to yourself just because, oh, darn it, I missed an opportunity. Do you have time for a story?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. True story. In 1974, my first year as a rabbi, I came to the greater Kansas City area, and there was a wonderful retired rabbi here who was blind, so I would study with him. I would read to him every week. We'd study Midrash, my favorite aspect of rabbinic tradition. And after we would study for a while, then the real lessons would begin. He said to me, Michael, when do you say the Shehecheyanu prayer? For those unfamiliar, praise are you, eternal, our God, ruler of the universe, kept us in life, sustained us, and brought us to this special moment. I was right out of seminary, right? I knew more than I was ever going to know. When you're doing for something the first time, for the first time in season. He said, wrong. I said, what do you mean? It's not wrong. He said the following, using a Talmudic phrase that absolutely altered my view of the wonder we call living. Michael, when are you not doing something for the first time? Ever since, right on the back behind my right ear is a miniature of Rabbi Gershon Hattis going through, I can't get through one Shehecheyanu before it's time for the next one and the next one and the next one. Now, admittedly, there are times when it's just background noise. But there are moments And yes, the bush burns unconsumed, and I know it, and my life is enriched because of it.
I want to thank Rabbi Michael Zedek. I feel like we could probably do twice as long a discussion.
Oh, all right, let's go ahead.
And my engineer would kill me, and my producer also. The book is called Taking Miracles Seriously, A Journey to Everyday Spirituality. You can find it on Amazon. Where can people go to find out more about you and to find out more about
the
book?
There is a website that was created, rabbimichaelzedek.com. Or Google me or something me, I don't know. You know, this world that I live in is just so electronically more sophisticated than I am a tech troglodyte. But I recently had a TED Talk, which is,
wow.
I don't know how you find them, but I guess if you go to YouTube or
I think you search Michael Zedek TED Talk and that's how you find it.
The title that TED gave the talk is The Four Beautifuls, and it's a small piece of the book. It's 10 minutes approximately. The Four Beautifuls, F-O-U-R.
Lovely. I want to thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure. And I should note that if you want to discover the miraculous in everything, really a lovely book. Michael, thanks so much.
No, thank you, Sam. Great to hear your voice. Kol tuv, hatzlacha, and thank you.
You're very welcome. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Two Jewish. Our guest will be Professor Arnold Eisen, Chancellor Emeritus of Jewish Theological Seminary, author of an important new book of Jewish theology, Seeking the Hidden God. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading in Kiddush in person and on our Facebook page. Sign up now, our fabulous Light Up the Night celebration of Beit Simcha's 6th anniversary in a pre-Hanukkah festival is this coming Saturday, December 21st at 4:30 p.m., a cabaret night of theater and music, gourmet latkes, drinks, lights on the darkest night of the year. Great festivities for all. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sponsor or, you know, join us. It will be the best way to celebrate for Hanukkah that you can imagine. Call 520-276-5675 to sign up if you can't do it online. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Hanukkah preview of music for the Festival of Lights. It's, yeah, I know, another parody. A West Side Story Hanukkah from 613. Good pre-holiday fun. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Candles were lighting on Hanukkah. Blessings reciting on Hanukkah. Fried foods were biting on Hanukkah. Family uniting on Hanukkah.
I made a clay dreidel to spin.
Why does it only land on Shin?
Sufgani, you're with my family.
I'll take a latke if you please.
Chocolate mani on Chanukah. Latkes are crunchy on Chanukah. Presents from Bobby on Chanukah.
I want a puppy for Chanukah.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.